On Monday, August 8th, Tall Can Audio hits 1,000 episodes.
Wait, that's still on? Who could possibly still care?
And the gang is all here to celebrate.
It's euphoric. It's got to be close to nirvana. It's outstanding.
For the first time ever, Maddie, Michaela, Rob, and Matt are all live in studio together.
It's happening, you guys! It's happening! Oh, my God, guys! Oh, my God! I wish you all were here!
Is this likely to go well?
Just check my notes here. No!
At least it will make a lot of noise.
Boom. Here comes the boom.
1,000 pods and 1,000 pints.
I don't think I've ever been as proud in my entire life.
TCA 1000 drops Monday, August 8th, wherever you find low-quality podcasts.
Fuck, it's out of control. Shit.
I'm going to tell y'all with a tear in my eye, this is the greatest moment in my life.
I'm not sure what the f*** this is. I'm about to find out.
This is Tall Can Audio.
How's it going, everybody? Welcome into Tall Can Audio number 718. Make sure you are subscribed wherever you're listening to this. We're on Twitter and Instagram at Tall Can Audio, facebook.com/tallcanaudio. Really happy to be welcoming to the show today from Sportsnet, Kevin Mickey. How are you doing, man?
I am doing spectacular, Matt. Thanks so much for having me on.
I'm really excited about this. I know, you and I have chatted a little bit over the last couple of months about, you know, whether or not we could do something like this and have you on. And I figured the week of SummerSlam, the biggest party of the summer, supposedly, although
it always is.
Yeah.
Every single year, it's the biggest party of the summer, and you just can't miss that party.
Figured this was maybe a good time to do it. I also wanted to ask you a little bit about the Top Turnbuckle podcast, which I was a fan of. I know it's defunct now, but I really enjoyed the vibe that you guys had going on with that show, so I want to talk a little bit about that. But before we get into any of that, you know the deal around here. Mm-hmm. What have you got to sip on today?
Well, at this current time, as we're recording this, it's in the afternoon.
I'll level with everybody. It's 2 p.m. on a weekday.
Therefore, and also I will be going to my place of employment this evening.
Okay.
So right now I'm sipping on some delicious home-brewed coffee.
Okay. I think that's fair.
I'll tell you. Over the weekend, I was up at a cottage with a couple of friends. We were supposed to have gone to a concert, but obviously that didn't happen for reasons that don't really have to be explained. But anyways, we still used the cottage, which was nice. And I had just got back from a long trip where I acquired tons and tons of craft beer. So really, it was the craft beer world was my oyster.
Nice.
And I picked up a few things, but I just went local from where I was. I was up in Muskoka, so I grabbed a few things from Muskoka Brewery. And I was drinking some of that. They had a beer that you can only get up there right now. It's a double IPA, a hazy IPA.
Okay.
Real strong. It was like 8%. And I'm not always going after the super strong double IPAs, but this was it was actually really, really good.
Yeah, when you're in the neighborhood.
Exactly. Yeah. So I had one of those. Otherwise, I was sucking back a nice little sour that they had too. We went to Sawdust Brewery, which is right in Gravenhurst where we were staying, and they had some sweet, sweet sour beers. Some other beers that I picked up too. I've been to so many damn breweries over. On a trip that I recently had, I went to 11 craft breweries in 13 days, and I just tried to sample all the local water as much as I could.
You can't remember anything.
Exactly. I was camping, so what else is there to do? Just drink beer around the campfire.
Right. Well, this is interesting because what I've got set out here in front of me is also from the Muskoka Brewing Company, just by chance.
Wow.
Yeah, kind of strange there. People who caught Monday's show, episode 716, heard me reference the fact that I placed an order up here in Ottawa from the Nita Beer Company, and they said they would deliver that on Tuesday, and they made that very clear through the entire ordering process, and somehow I just completely ignored it and assumed I'd have it for the weekend, and I didn't. So here we are recording this on Tuesday, and they were to have come Tuesday morning, and they called and rescheduled, so I still don't have what I was expecting to have from Nita. So I'm kind of digging deep back into the fridge here in the studio. And despite the fact that it is mid-afternoon on a weekday, I'm going to go ahead. I hope you you won't blame me.
I would prefer that you did.
Yeah.
If you can, you need to do it. So
yeah.
I'm hoping that you'll drink some for me as well. Actually,
so I am into the Hazed and Confused Juicy IPA. It says
I like that beer. Yeah, I like
from
that
the
beer.
Muskoka Brewing Company. Now, a lot of people know if you've been listening to this show, I'm not a huge IPA guy. I don't mind an IPA, but I'm not big into it. But as I've said, my options here, I'm getting close to the back of the fridge, so that's why the IPA has come out today. So this is the, like I said, the Hazed and Confused Juicy IPA from the Muskoka Brewing Company.
I will say that one of my favorite beers, it's got to be one of my top favorite, is from Muskoka Brewing, and it's Detour. It's available everywhere in
Ontario.
Yeah,
I've had that a few times.
And
it's not bad.
It's a crisp, light IPA, and a buddy of mine who works in the craft beer industry says if you don't like a lot of IPAs or you're trying to get into them, Detour is the perfect beer to kind of help you with that. It's just crisp, it's light, it's drinkable. It's not like you drink one and you're like, wow, that's an 8% beer, hit me quick.
Right.
It's light, it's only 4.5%.
This is juicy. It's not crisp. That is normally the word I would use to describe an IPA if it's a strong one or whatever. This is much more juicy than it is crisp. So I'll give them that on the title. The naming convention went well. I don't mind it. Again, maybe that makes sense, right? If you're not a big-time IPA guy, a little less crispness is more what you're looking for. But this you could easily see having a few, you know, sitting outside somewhere, especially here in the summer and whatever. That's so great. This isn't too bad.
You just want something that has a little bit of flavor to it and that you can have a couple of and still taste the flavor. It's not like you drink 16
right.
Coors Lights and you're like, 16 waters. That's good.
And this is if you like spending your Sunday afternoons in front of the toilet, that's a great way to go about it. So, before we get into what I originally had you on to talk about, have you followed or seen this morning as we're recording this, the controversy, I guess we're going to call it, around Fernando Tatis and the inappropriate Grand Slam he hit last night?
What a bunch of piss babies the Texas Rangers are. They continue to be just the worst.
This is
you know what, the Chris Woodward, you know what I don't like about this guy is that he continues to play baseball when we're playing a baseball game.
Right.
What is that?
So for people who didn't catch this, the Padres are kicking the crap out of the Texas Rangers, and they're up by 7 in the bottom of the 8th inning, and the bases are loaded. Fernando Tatis Jr. Is at the plate, and he's down, or he's up 3-0 in the count. And I guess the code, if I'm understanding correctly, dictates that you don't swing, you don't crush it out of the park, which is what he did. Baseball's an interesting sport in that there's no, and it's one of the things I love about it, there's no clock that counts down and decides the game's over. You have to beat me, right? And so I kind of dig that, and I like the idea that I'm going to put the nail in this coffin, even if it seems like it's already nailed shut. I'm making sure when you come up in the ninth, you're not even entertaining the idea that you might be coming back here. But I guess it's against the code. You embarrassed us at 3-0. You don't swing at that. Maybe you take the walk. Maybe you just take the strike. And the part that's most infuriating is his own manager is like, well, maybe he should have just taken the strike. And but to what end? Like, is he got to just stand there and get struck out or get a run walked in? Like, it's horrible, man. It's horrible.
Just can't baseball go a few days without embarrassing itself? It's absolutely ridiculous. They've been, out of all the sports that have come back since the pandemic started, baseball has just been constantly embarrassing themselves. And this is just the latest example in terms of one of the brightest young stars in the game, Fernando Tatis Jr., who is so exciting to watch.
Yes,
I love him.
Yeah.
It's actually what makes me enjoy if I'm at work and it's midnight and the Padres are on. I don't mind because
right.
Fernando Tatis Jr. is on that team and I enjoy it quite a bit. So you have one of the best young stars in the game who crushes an opposite field grand slam, and we're punishing him for it?
Right.
Not only is the other team pissed off, but his own manager's not defending him. It's
and he apologized. I hate that most of all. I'm like, no,
made
man.
Him apologize.
Yeah, I know. You crushed him. And the whole thing, and it sounds so simple. That's because it is so simple. Just pitch better. Pitch better so that you're not down by 7 in the 8th inning. Pitch better so you're not down 0-3 to him in the count. You know, you set yourself up for this in every possible way, and he crushed it, and I loved it, and apparently we're not supposed to love it.
Those should be our unwritten rules, that if you don't want grand slams to be hit against you, you should pitch better.
Right.
It seems like a pretty simple rule to me.
You'd think.
Yeah.
So this week is SummerSlam week. I know you had said you're planning on having some stuff up at sportsnet.ca on SummerSlam. I know you said you were going to be speaking to David Arquette, which is an interesting name for longtime wrestling fans. Maybe before you tell us about the interview you're planning to do with him, maybe you could kind of remind us wrestling fans why this guy is important in the wrestling world. Because as an actor, he hasn't been particularly relevant in a while. But we still, in the wrestling industry, we know that name very well.
And, you know, what's funny is that he hasn't been relevant. David Arquette hasn't been relevant in acting for a while because of how he was portrayed in wrestling.
Right.
The reason that I'm speaking with David is because he's putting out a documentary called You Cannot Kill David Arquette, and it chronicles him trying to get back into wrestling. And to answer your question, he wants to get back into wrestling as a form of as a redemption story.
Yeah, like a make good.
That's right. So 20 years ago, in the year 2000, there was a movie coming out called Ready to Rumble, starring David Arquette and Scott Kahn. And that was based, WCW wrestlers were used in the movie. And the thing was, oh, these two guys, they love wrestling, and their favorite wrestler is getting kicked out of WCW, and they got to go help him. Anyways, when I was young, I was 11 or 12 when the movie came out.
Right.
I loved it.
Okay.
Now, in the year 2020, what a piece of trash that movie is.
It's such a bad movie.
It's terrible. So anyways, as a way to promote the movie, WCW brought David Arquette into their storyline. David Arquette ends up winning the WCW championship, and boy, oh boy, did that piss off wrestling fans.
Yeah.
Because that is absolutely burning, pissing, throwing trash all over the legacy that is that belt.
That's the belt Ric Flair wore, and that Hulk Hogan wore, and that Big Van Vader wore, and now David Arquette is wearing.
The legends of the NWA wore that belt. And now Harley Race, everybody, you're throwing trash all over, and it's like it doesn't even matter anymore. And wrestlers got pissed off of that too, saying, "I'm working this hard, and you're going to give this Hollywood actor who's never worked a day in his life in our business, you're going to give it to him." And then fans also reflected that opinion when they heard wrestlers being pissed off.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, everybody's pissed off at David Arquette, and to go with that, Hollywood producers, film studios who see that this guy is in the wrestling business, which already has a terrible reputation to begin with, they say, "I'm not going to cast this guy. I mean, he was this goofy character in Scream, and now he's wrestling, and now he didn't get any roles after that."
Right.
Nobody liked this guy. Everybody hated him.
So he was married to Courtney Cox, right?
He was. Courtney Cox is in the film, too. I had a chance to.
If somebody's going to like you,
yes,
let it be Courtney Cox. Like, that's okay, right? Like, I could get by if Courtney Cox liked me.
big time. there's a super interesting part of the movie where they interview Courtney Cox, and she says that she actually felt a little embarrassed by David Arquette being in wrestling, because she says she was at the height of her popularity in Friends, and he had just come off all the Scream movies where he's one of the big stars, because I think they said that the producers were going to kill him off after the first one, but then they love the character so much that they just brought him back.
Okay.
And he's at the height of his popularity, and then he wants to go do wrestling because he loves wrestling.
Sure, yeah.
But everybody else who saw it, everybody who didn't like wrestling hated it. Everybody who liked wrestling hated it.
Yeah.
So everybody hated it.
Right.
And so now David Arquette has this redemption story in front of him. He wants to show the wrestling world that he cares and he wants to.
Which he did even at the time, right? If I'm not mistaken, any pay that he got on WCW, I believe, went to charity or something. Like, he wasn't trying to be. And, you know, for non-wrestling fans, they didn't book him. Like, they didn't set it up that he beat up Ric Flair or something. It was a fluke, you know, who falls. I was going to say the cage. It wasn't. That was how Vince Russo won the title. I don't even.
Yeah. Oh, jeez. Yeah. That's opened up a can of worms, too.
Sure. But it was set up so that, like, you know, it's a fluke that he ends up winning it. They don't try and portray him as this tough guy. But you've still put the biggest title in that company on a guy who isn't Goldberg or Hulk Hogan or Kevin Nash, right?
That's right. And that's really what pissed everybody off. Yeah. So he pinned, I think it was P, pinned Derek Bischoff. That's how he ended up winning. And again, like you said, it was just a fluke, but that still just pissed off. God, like, good God, people did not like that. So the story is he wants to get back into wrestling, and he does go through the trials and tribulations of proving to everybody and to himself that he really deserves a second chance of being looked at. And there's a bunch of wrestlers who are current in the movie. Diamond Dallas Page is in the movie, and he helps him out. And after watching the movie, I watched it alongside my fiance, who's not a wrestling fan whatsoever.
Right.
And when I told her that we could watch the movie, she was a little hesitant. She's like, like, wrestling, I don't know. But we watched it, and she really liked it too. So if there's any sort of proof that anybody could enjoy this movie, that it's, I loved it as a wrestling fan.
So is it a doc or is it fictional?
It's a documentary.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And it just, it chronicles David throughout him trying to get back into wrestling. And there's some unique cameos from his best friend, Luke Perry.
Oh, yeah.
Really close to right before Luke Perry passed away.
Right.
And it gets pretty emotional. And, you know, my fiance was super into it.
For those who don't know as well, Luke Perry's son is in the wrestling industry over in a second league that I want to ask you about as well, called All Elite Wrestling, that's on TNT and TSN here in Canada.
And his son's also in the movie.
Okay.
Yeah.
It was always interesting to me, and, you know, the vitriol that was directed towards David Arquette from wrestling fans was sort of unfair. Like, he even knew in the moment, oh, this is going to be a problem, right? Like, people aren't going to... He was enough of a wrestling fan to know people aren't going to buy this. And in terms of a story, in terms of any sort of... When you tune in to watch wrestling, you have to kind of suspend disbelief a little bit and be willing to go along with it. And it was a bridge too far for a lot of people to go, yeah, okay, this is clearly... the guy who was running the company at the time said it was great promotion and it got us on the cover of USA Today and these sort, but it was like, yeah, but it did those things as a joke. Like, it was ripping you. And it was one of the things that helped. There was a long list of them, but to kill off the company that this happened in. And I always found it interesting that David Arquette took so much shit. Obviously he was the face of it, but he wasn't the guy who made the decision that this is what we're going to do and we're going to make you world champion. It is interesting to me that here we are 20 years later, a guy who is this big of a fan of the industry is trying to make up for something that ultimately really wasn't his fault.
It absolutely wasn't his fault. In fact, he's and other people have gone on record of saying that he didn't like the idea.
Yeah.
Nor did many other wrestlers in the back. Everyone said, are you sure we should do this?
Right.
And the powers that be, who that be Eric Bischoff and Vince Russo, they said, yes, this is a good idea. And I know that they say any press is good press or no press is bad press. But I mean, sometimes you could be on the front of a USA Today for the wrong reasons.
Yes.
And if somebody says, David Arquette won a wrestling championship, what a loser. And then they put the USA Today down and never think of it again.
Yeah.
And then next time they see wrestling on their TV, they say, oh, look at this shit. And then they change the channel.
Yeah. Like, if you don't care about wrestling at all and you're flipping around and you're kind of looking at it and you're going, oh, okay, that's the guy. I guess David Arquette could have beat up any of these guys. Like, if you're not a wrestling fan, this didn't help you, right? Like, as a to want to get into it. It made, as you said a few minutes ago, it hurt on every side of it. It hurt his Hollywood credentials because he's involved with wrestling, and wrestling fans went, well, this is embarrassing for me to watch, right? Like, it was too hard.
I always say, too, that wrestling promotions are always quick to say it's always great to get mainstream recognition. And I always say that, like, it's it's good to get press.
Yeah.
But I feel like at the end of the day, a lot of promotions say we need to get mainstream press in order to bring in new fans. And I question that because in the late 90s, when wrestling was at its zenith, thanks to all its young, great new stars, I don't think that it was a celebrity pulling somebody in to be a wrestling
not
fan.
At all,
rather, it was Stone Cold Steve Austin, The Rock, Triple H, Big Show, Mankind over in WCW. You still had Hulk Hogan, who was doing his thing. And if you hadn't seen Hulk before, Hulk's going to bring in. Then
Goldberg.
WCW also had new stars like Goldberg.
Yep.
They had Sting still, Kevin Nash, Scott Hall. It was the wrestlers who would ultimately bring you in and keep you there because they're there.
And created
they are there
celebrities outside as opposed to the opposite, right? Mick Foley, their Mankind, goes on to become a New York Times best-selling author. The Rock goes on to become one of the biggest movie stars in the world. Like, this, for a time, was as hot as it gets, kind of through 97, 8, 9, 2000. Sort of, I guess a lot of people recognize WrestleMania 17 in March of 2001 as sort of the end of that golden era where it starts to tip the other way. That happens to coincide with the death of WCW, these two competing companies, and, you know, as the competition goes away, maybe it's harder to stay as you're not pushing the envelope as far. Maybe you're not quite as edgy and just in general, maybe people had kind of seen it. I wonder as I often think of myself as the perfect encapsulation of the WWF run in terms of, and maybe I'm just on the tail end of it, but I'm born in 83. So when I'm 6 and 7 and 8 years old, the Hulkster is still kind of doing his thing in the red and yellow, and it's the tail end of it, but he's the big star. It's take your vitamins and say your prayers and whatever. And
brother.
Then I get brother, yes, and I get right into it with Brett because he's the Canadian guy and he's the smaller guy, and nobody sold an ass kicking like Bret Hart. Like, you believed that guy was in trouble when Yokozuna was beating the shit out of him or something, right? Like, and then I become a teenager through the attitude stuff with Stone Cold and The Rock. And then you sort of age out towards college and whatever else is happening. But the industry also has this kind of downturn. And certainly it's really cold now, but it started to fall off around, as I said, 01, 02. And I wonder, like, if you agree that that's sort of the timetable that we've started now. And the pandemic amplifies everything. You know, it's easy to rip on the stuff they're putting on TV now in empty buildings and stuff. That's not their fault, right? That no one could have possibly seen this. But there has been a long, steady downturn of ratings, of celebrity, of attention from entertainment outlets over, man, it seems like 15 years now. It's sort of eroded away.
I would say that you definitely grew up in the greatest time to be a wrestling fan, where you were a child when the WWF was targeting children with their promotion.
Yeah, the superhero.
Exactly. Yeah. And you loved it.
Yep.
And when you would start to grow out of that, well, now we got something else for you. We have the Attitude Era, where it's all the complete opposite of targeting children.
Look, there's boobs and middle fingers and beers and whatever. That guy's cool, right? At the time when that's what I want to see.
Exactly. You morphed from the perfect demographic to the other perfect demographic.
Yeah.
And since then, this is a very simple way to look at what has happened to WWE in terms of failing ratings, and that's really the best way to say it. And it's that an over-reliance on past stars and not enough emphasis placed on creating new stars. And the problem with the pandemic now is that that has been amplified with the old stars not able to come and be on television, and even their current new stars as well. Somebody like Roman Reigns, who has had cancer in the past, and he has a compromised immune system, doesn't want to be anywhere. He wants to isolate himself, completely understandable.
Sure.
Now you've lost one of your top stars, and you haven't propped up your other younger burgeoning stars on a pedestal high enough that they're going to turn the ratings up for you at that point. It's certainly become an issue. And here's another thing that I would say with the downturn in popularity in wrestling. I do think that it is cyclical, so you will see peaks and valleys, but sure. It's definitely in a big time valley at this point.
Yeah.
But Jim Cornette said this, and I certainly don't like 90% of what that guy says.
But he's entertaining as hell, but he's not always right.
He certainly is. That's correct.
Yeah.
He said, wrestling has gone from simulating a conflict to exhibiting a performance. And you can agree with that. Mm-hmm. But the problem with that is now, it is so magnified without fans.
Yes.
That it's just, WWE's product seems like such a simulated performance over, instead of a conflict, that it's just so evident with no fans.
Yeah.
Or the fake fans that they have in the crowd, just like the backstage hands from NXT.
Yeah.
And now it's difficult to, as you mentioned earlier, suspend your disbelief.
Right.
Like, why are all these guys walking around without masks? That right. doesn't make any sense. Like, what do you mean? Like, they can just
what world
fight
do they
each
live
other?
In? Right.
Yeah. Like, is that fine? And it's very difficult to buy into it. And I think that has certainly had a major effect on the ratings, is that people see the same thing over and over, it's stale. And now it's just really amplified how terrible an actor and actresses the talents right. are, through really not a big fault of their own. I don't want to pin this on the talent.
Sure.
It's just the long-stemming development of every other talent, starting from 15 years ago all the way into now. It's just, it's a long simmering problem that's really starting to boil up.
And you've sort of raised an interesting point there, in that this idea of believability, and I mentioned how you believed Bret Hart was getting his ass kicked. And
oh, yeah.
I think back, I think my favorite match ever is Bret versus Owen at WrestleMania 10.
Oh yeah, that's one of my top favorite matches. Dude.
Yeah, and it looks like, you know, you still have to suspend disbelief. Like, when you throw somebody into the ropes, they would just stop running. Like, if you want to be logical about this. But it still resembles an athlete. Like, I can believe that this is
the Irish whip. It's the
right.
most unstoppable wrestling move of
right.
all time.
Just don't run into that post. You'll be fine. Like, just stop running. But no, you have to be prepared to live with that if you want to get into this. And I was okay with that. And part of it certainly is that I'm younger and more gullible and whatever. But at the same time, as the bar gets raised over and over, and we see your ladder matches and people fall from 15 feet and then get up, and then you see more and more of the high-flying stuff, which, again, I'm fine with. It's so entertaining. But when you then take the crowd out of it, you're like, why'd you catch that guy? Like, why didn't you just step out of the mm-hmm. way and let him fall on his face? Or whatever? Like, those are things that I can't fault the company for, in terms of there being no crowd to give you that reaction. When 15,000 people are all taking pictures and screaming and whatever, and someone takes this huge leap, you're like, holy shit, that was amazing. But when it's just some guy in an empty gym doing it, you're like, well, that was a dumb thing to do. Like, and they've sort of allowed that to build for 15 years to this point now, where obviously it was out of their control that there's no fans, but without the fans, you almost need more of that amateur style, whether it be Brad or whether it be Kurt Angle or Mr. Perfect or pick your guy through the generations, but that at least it resembled not a real fight, but something, you know, like, do you know what I'm saying? Like,
I absolutely do. Yeah. And I feel like WWE may be listening or thinking of that idea a little bit in some of their recent presentation. I will give them a little bit of credit with what they've been attempting to do lately. They have something called Raw Underground now, which comes on at 10 p.m. So it makes it seem like, oh, like, this is, we're getting to the R-rated
right,
stuff, because
sure.
it comes on the 10 p.m. slot. It's basically just like, you know, a shitty Fight Club type gimmick where Shane McMahon kind
first
of runs
the rule
thing.
Of Raw Underground is nobody watches Raw Underground.
The second rule.
Right.
I've
heard about this. What is it? I haven't seen it for myself yet.
It's really tough to describe other than just like it looks like Fight Club, and
okay.
it's just more, it looks like it's just more supposed to be like a shoot fight, like
okay.
an actual mixed martial arts fight, you know.
You mean
less,
the Brawl for All?
Thank
that
God,
really
not the
good.
Brawl for All.
Yeah,
yeah, this is still a work, brother. It's
okay.
not a shoot. It's supposed to be a shoot, but
right.
it's a work. We
okay.
all know that. So it's basically like, you know, this past Raw, Dolph Ziggler was sitting there, and for fans who don't know, and it was terrible that the commentators didn't mention this on Monday. Dolph Ziggler actually has a pretty extensive background in actual amateur wrestling.
Right.
So anyways, there's another guy in the ring, one of the Viking Raiders, who's a big dude. Mm-hmm. And Dolph Ziggler says, like, oh, yeah, whatever, you can't fight. And then they get in and they actually have, like, a shoot fight. Or a shoot, as I use quotations. Shoot fight. And it looks like it's more of catch style, you know, there's not a lot of flipping and diving like Dolph's actually, you know, trying to use some wrestling technique. So to your point, what you said earlier, like no one's gonna stand underneath the stand on the floor as someone then look at somebody doing a moonsault off the rope
right.
and just catch them.
Yeah,
there's no opportunity to do that. It looks like a shoot fight.
Yeah, so right, okay, I'm with you there.
There's an opportunity to make it seem like you can buy into this, to suspend your disbelief. Like, okay, I'm in on the joke again. I'll go along with this
because right.
it's a little different.
What do you make? I'll be honest with like I don't know if I'd be what they would call a lapsed wrestling fan, because up until March, I would still tune it in. I wasn't nearly as, like, back in the day, every Monday, I did not miss it. I was at home in front of the TV for Raw. For a number of reasons, you grow up, you have a life, all these sorts of things kind of start to, but even if I was sitting at home, there was often times where I would, like, holy crap, this is too long, or there's too much, and I would tune out, but I would, you know, as often as not, at least check in on Monday night and see what was happening. And I still knew a lot of the characters and could follow it. Every Mania, every SummerSlam, and every Rumble, I would find a stream somewhere. To me, those were the big three. Survivor Series used to be part of that, but they seem to have lost track of what that is, or I don't know what that is anymore. It's not, to me, the same as it once was. But those are the big three. Mm-hmm. And you could count on seeing Lesnar, right? You could count on seeing Ronda when she was in there for a year, and she was somebody who brought me back, oh, I got to see what they're going to do with this, right?
Big time, yeah.
I wanted to see how these things were going to go. The only reason I know SummerSlam is happening this Sunday right now is because I also follow, obviously, a significant amount of wrestling accounts on Twitter. I haven't watched Raw in months, and I was interested early on to see how they would handle the shows behind closed doors. They're doing it out of their performance center, which, for people who don't know, they have like a training facility and a show that's like the minor leagues of WWE, and the cameras are set up and they have the stage, and it's training you how to do WWE things before you
how
hit
to be
main.
A sports entertainer.
Right. And so they were doing these shows out of there with an empty arena, and it just sort of was kind of like, I don't know, like whatever was left of my interest. I'll probably come back when this returns to normal, but right now this isn't doing it. It sounds like SummerSlam is a go from the Amway Center in
That's
Orlando.
Right.
So they're back in an arena as opposed to their training facility, because it will allow them to do some things visually in terms of digital fans and things like that a lot of these leagues are trying to do across sports. So I don't fault them for that, but I couldn't tell you one match on the show. And it doesn't sound like, you know, their big guy that they bring in for all the big shows, even if he's not there for anything in between. Brock Lesnar is normally on the show. You'll correct me if I'm wrong. He's not on this show.
Scheduled to be, at least.
Okay. Fair enough. You got to tune in. Anything can happen.
Yeah. Anything can happen at the WWE.
What is your take on the show? Is it something that, you know, someone who's got an eye on this, is it intriguing to you? Like, does it look like a better show than it's getting credit for? What's sort of the buzz around SummerSlam this Sunday?
What if I were to tell you that instead of at the Amway Center, they will be at the Thunderdome?
Ooh.
That's right. It is just the Amway Center, but they're calling it the Thunderdome. WWE is trying something different. They have, so here's the latest news. WWE has a 2-month lease at the Amway Center in Orlando. That's where the Orlando Magic usually play of the NBA. And they are trying something different, where Kevin Dunn, their VP of production television, has said that they're going to have LED boards all over the place. Like you mentioned, they're going to have fans digitized, you know, sitting on their couches, watching, reacting. So there will be some fan interaction now. Mm-hmm. And then they'll also have, you know, like LED projectors everywhere. I think the press release said, like, there'll be projectors, there'll be lasers, there'll be this and that. Yeah. So they're, you know, really pumping it up as something different. So with the limited production capabilities available inside a tiny little gym, like you mentioned, at their training center, at their performance center, now they have a lot of stuff at their disposal.
Right.
They have an entire arena available to them. So at least this will change things up a little bit. And they're going back to live television, at least for a couple weeks. Starting this Friday with SmackDown, they'll be live again. They've been taped for the past however many months.
Right.
A lot of different opportunities coming up. As for the matches...
Well, just before you move on to that,
yeah,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah. No,
go ahead. Is that a good thing to you? Is being in the arena, and as you say, there's far more visual capability there, but you also, like, the NHL took painfully expensive, measures to make sure that this did not look like a big empty arena. They put up big screens and stages and stuff up close to the rink. The NBA, in the bubble there in Orlando, they chose not to go to NBA arenas where it was clearly a 20,000 seat arena with people in it. WWE is going the other way. They're going into a bigger facility. I get that it allows some HD things to be done and some tech things to be done, but is there a concern that you almost amplify the fact that there's nobody here?
I think that the slipping ratings for WWE, and make no mistake about it, in the United States and even in Canada as well, ratings have been slipping a little bit.
Yeah.
It necessitated that change.
Okay.
They needed to do something, and this is something. And the good news for WWE is that they have hundreds of millions of dollars in cash reserves.
Right.
So it's not like Vince McMahon is emptying his pockets trying to figure out how to do this.
Right.
They will be able to do something different. Whether it will be a success, that remains to be seen. The good news is that they have the two-month lease.
They're clearly going to set something up here long-term.
Yes,
it's not an in-and-out deal.
And if they try something, say this Friday or this Sunday at SummerSlam, Monday on Raw, and they say, not really working, well, guess what? You have seven more weeks after that to attempt something different. So there's a lot of opportunities for WWE. They're working with a California-based events company that does a bunch of, holograms,
sure,
and whatnot.
Yeah.
I can't remember the name of them right now, but they're doing something. They're trying.
Yep.
They're trying something different. And, give them credit for that.
You have to. Yeah, no, if we're all in a weird spot.
Yes, absolutely. I'm sure that executives at Fox are saying, like, what the hell? Like, we paid whatever it was, $500 million for these rights, and now...
Now it's just two guys in their underwear rolling around in an empty gym.
Yeah, rolling around in an empty gym. Just like, why don't we just put a live stream of all the opening Good Lifes in Toronto, and I'm sure we get the same thing. So, give WWE credit for trying something different. Whether it'll be good, like I said, we'll see.
Yep.
The matches...
Yes.
I don't blame you for not knowing the matches, because up until a couple weeks ago, there really weren't a lot of matches.
Okay.
We had the best match that I think that'll be on the card is Randy Orton taking on Drew McIntyre, who's the WWE champion.
Right.
Unfortunately for Randy Orton, he is putting on some of the best work of his career in front of some of the lowest numbers WWE has seen during his time in WWE, which has been
20 years. I did see some of his stuff with Edge, which I thought was really good, except for that big, long WrestleMania match, which just went way too long for me, and I know for a lot of people.
And that was a shame, too, because obviously, as Canadians, I was really pumped to see Edge back, Orangeville, Ontario's finest.
Sure.
It was really cool to see him, but yeah, you're right, that match wasn't...
But
great.
Orton, as you said, he's been one of the high points, and he's been, like, really good, but nobody's looking at it, which is rough.
And exactly, it sucks, because Orton is doing such good stuff. It's kind of, if you watch WWE 15 years ago, when he was doing the Legend Killer gimmick, it's kind of that again. He's just beating up a bunch of old guys. Last week, what day is it right now? The 17th or something like that?
Yep.
So last Monday, when Randy Orton did a promo with Ric Flair was crying in the ring, but it wasn't like the typical Ric Flair crying. It was just like a soft, somber cry.
Okay.
And Randy Orton almost started crying too, and then Randy Orton hit Ric Flair in the nuts and then punted him in the face.
Sure.
And like it was...
Sounds like wrestling.
It was one of the best promos that I've seen in the last couple of years. I was so impressed by it.
Right.
Especially you're so impressed with just like everything else has not been super great. But then they drop this bombshell and you're like, wow, this is good all of a sudden.
When you mentioned the guy that he's taking on, who maybe is suffering more than anybody through this, is Drew McIntyre.
Yeah,
they took the risk. They allowed at WrestleMania, which also had to be done at the Performance Center, they booked him to beat the hell out of Brock Lesnar and beat him in a pretty dominating fashion. But you don't get that crowd explosion. And then for the weeks afterwards where he's the champ and you don't get to know like you normally would, you know, the night after WrestleMania, the new champ walks out and the crowd's going to react. And whether it's good or bad or indifferent, you can read into that and they can make their decisions based on that. And when you just come out into these empty buildings, you have no idea whether people are loving them or hating them or how it's going. And so for a guy like him who's been in the business a long time trying to get it to where he is, like, this is a horrible spot for him to be in terms of, you know, is he solidified as a character? Is this working? Or
I think it's a great point that you're making. And it's really interesting to think, because I could tell you that Drew McIntyre is having one of the better babyface runs a champion has had in recent memory.
Right.
But then again, I might be wrong, because if you look at some of the reactions on social media, you say, wow, Drew McIntyre is doing really good. The problem with social media is that a lot of the times minority voices are amplified like crazy.
Yeah.
And your little bubble that you live in.
Way too much time on Leafs Twitter, I'm well aware of that.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
The little bubble that you live in on your social media account, you follow voices similar to your own.
That's right.
You hear all those opinions and you say, everybody else thinks that. The problem is, not everybody else thinks that.
Yeah.
Chris Jericho, for instance, of All Elite Wrestling, he's one of the biggest stars, and now he has recently said, he's just like, I don't even know if I'm over anymore, because no one is wrestling in front of fans anymore, so they can't get
that reaction
from the crowd. They don't know. Is Orange Cassidy, for example, one of the biggest stars in wrestling right now? At least I think so.
Right.
Is he still, if he goes out in front of a crowd, is he going to be that big star? Orange Cassidy, for those who don't know, is one of the bigger stars on All Elite Wrestling. He's doing a program with Chris Jericho right now.
Mm-hmm. What else stands out to you on this? I've been keeping note, and this is one of the things that at the time that I was listening to your podcast, which I sort of meant to get to earlier, we'll do this in a few minutes. At the time, I wasn't watching wrestling enough, but I was keeping up with it on your show. And I don't think that I'm alone in that, right? Like, I know these names. I know these characters. I'm not going to sit and watch Raw for 3 hours on Monday. Are you fucking kidding me? But if there are people who entertain, like, who are entertaining and are going to tell me what happened, I'll listen to them. And that's sort of what was going on at the, you know, my fandom at that point when I was listening to your show. And I wonder how much right now we're kind of looking at a spot where I followed on Twitter Seth Rollins, I guess, had a match recently where he had to rip somebody's eye out. I'm like,
Rey Mysterio.
And I love Rey, but I'm like, I'm not buying that. And I don't mean buy it in terms of pay for the pay-per-view. I'm just like, that's stupid. I'm not going to watch that. And then I guess last week he beat the shit out of Rey's son. What's he doing on SummerSlam? He's one of their biggest stars in the company. I assume he's fighting Rey's son.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So you're as interested in that as I expect.
I mean, sorry, if I were Vince McMahon, it's saying he took his eye.
Yes.
He took a gouge his eye out, damn it. Yeah, the whole gimmick was, it was called like an eye for an eye match, and they took that, it was literal, not just metaphorical. And so anyways, Seth Rollins gouged out Rey Mysterio's eye.
Sure.
And that, you just got to believe that it happened.
Of course.
And now Dominic, his son, is out for revenge.
Of course,
but,
yeah.
You know, Seth beat the shit out of him with a kendo stick, and then now they're going to be having a street fight, and it's good that it's just a street fight, because if you asked Rey Mysterio's son, who has apparently had very minimal training in wrestling, to go on one of the biggest pay-per-views of the year and have a match with one of the top wrestlers in the company, I don't think it would go very well.
Right.
So now that at least they can just have a bunch of gaga all over the place, and instead of trading hammerlocks, they can trade kendo stick blows to the face. You have stuff like that, and I'm watching last night when Dominic and Rey come in the ring together, and whatever, they take some revenge and hit Seth with a kendo stick a bunch of times, and it's just like, I don't know that I care that much about this. I just, you know, they have, this hasn't.
Which sucks because Seth is so good, like kind of mid-early 90s Shawn Michaels, right? Like he can be such a douchebag as a bad guy, which is what you want. And he's talented enough to back it up. And we're like, really? Like this is what we're doing? We're just out whacking people with kendo sticks and ripping eyes out. All right. Like,
there's just so much television to fill with WWE. There's so much television to fill that they just have to keep pumping things out. All of it's not going to be good. I accept that.
Yeah.
The problem is, right now, when it's something that I'm not interested, I find it very bad.
Yeah.
And I find it very hard to pay attention to. And like we mentioned earlier, with no fans and no reaction from anyone else, it just...
It's up to me. It's my reaction.
Exactly.
Like, if I'm kind of like, I don't know about this, but 20,000 people in the building are going crazy, you can turn me. You can make me go, wow, like, this is working. Mm-hmm. This is... If it's just me sitting here watching a couple guys on it, I'm like, all right, no.
Have The Rock Hogan from WrestleMania 18 in the Performance Center.
Right.
With no one there. No, it's not going to work. It would be one of the worst matches of all time.
Yes.
you turn off the sound for Rock Hogan, and the match is just like, it looks interesting enough, but it's not great.
Right.
The crowd is what makes it. The crowd makes wrestling matches. And right now...
I was supposed to be there.
With just I was there. It was great.
I had
Just like a middling tier. Just is this interesting? Yeah. I don't know. No crowd. No bueno.
Had nothing to do the entire winter of March or of 2002 except one weekend, and it happened to be the same weekend where I'd had tickets.
What a sad twist of events!
And if you watch the DVD, you can see my four friends who went in my place.
No way! Wow, that's rubbed salt.
Yeah, no, they were right down like floor level. It was awesome for them. It's terrible for me. What else then? What stands out to you? You know, that we haven't talked about yet for this weekend's card. What match are you looking forward to? What might be getting underrated because of the circumstances right now?
Honestly, there's not a lot. Okay. The thing that I think I'm most interested in outside of Drew and Randy is just what the whole spectacle will look like, what the Thunderdome is going to look like. I think it'll be interesting enough. Braun Strowman versus the Fiend Bray Wyatt could be a relatively interesting match, just because Bray Wyatt is really, really good in all aspects of wrestling.
And that's an easy spot to put some special effects and some whatever. Like, that's his character, right?
They have so much stuff at their disposal to use. So I think that the Fiend's match could be pretty good. Outside of that, you know, I'm not buying a ton of different stuff. They've some gimmicks here and there that could be fun, but I gotta
watch SummerSlam. Like, it's
supposed
to be a big deal. I watched Mania in the empty gym. I watched it. I enjoyed it. Many parts of it, anyway. The women's matches delivered.
It was still relatively new at that point.
Yeah, that's true. There was some novelty to it. Taker, AJ, in whatever that thing was called, the Boneyard match.
The Boneyard.
That was really good. I enjoyed that, right? Like I said, both the women's titles matches on both nights were both really good. There was some okay stuff. Like, you could kind of... But you're right. I think there's some novelty to it, and it wears off, and it's hard to keep justifying, you know, week after week after week. You know, I'm just not sure I'm feeling this.
I think the top billing on the card this weekend is the Thunderdome. The fact that they're doing something different. They're somewhere different.
Do you think that's calculated? Do you think they decided, holy crap, like, this is not a good show. We better find another way to sell it.
I think that Vince McMahon and all the other powers that work with him saw that the ratings were slipping.
Yeah.
I'm sure that they had conversations with network executives, particularly at Fox.
Yeah.
And they said, can we please try and do something different?
Anything.
And Vince is not one to shy away from trying something different like this. So let's dive right in and let's see what happens in the Thunderdome.
What can you tell me about All Elite Wrestling? And I've sort of been following their rise. I think one of the things for a long time, you know, TNA was kind of the second tier. But they didn't have a great TV deal, and the star power just wasn't quite there. And all of a sudden, we get this other league, less than a year old now. Well, the promotion might be about a year old now, but they've only been on TV since last September or October, so just shy of a year. And they end up on TNT primetime weeknight, which I think a lot of people believed was always going to be the hardest thing for any promotion that was going to try to compete with Vince was getting a good TV deal on a network that mattered. And they got that right away. And for people who don't know, Tony Khan, who is the guy who owns All Elite Wrestling, he also, I'm not sure, is it him or his family that owns the Jacksonville Jaguars?
His family. Tony Khan is the son of Shotgun.
Okay. So they own the Jags. They own, I believe, an EPL team.
Yeah, Fulham.
Right.
Fulham FC.
Thank you. I'm anything but a soccer guy here, so needed somebody to pick that up for. So they got cash. They can make Bold things happen.
Yeah.
And they brought in some kind of indie darlings, as they're called, people who are very popular across the minor leagues of wrestling, essentially, or in Japan. You know, Americans and Canadians who were in Japan. Chris Jericho ends up there. He's kind of the big name. They bring in WWE's Dean Ambrose, and I believe he's champion right now.
Yep.
They've done a nice job of creating an alternative show. And before the pandemic, it wasn't drawing ratings like Raw or SmackDown, but it was doing pretty well for itself. And I wonder what you make of them and their viability, you know, aside from the pandemic, where everybody's kind of whatever. Do you think they got a shot to make this interesting?
So I write about wrestling and I consume wrestling from a media perspective quite often. However, I'm still a wrestling fan.
Yeah.
And when I watch AEW, I still pop big time for a lot of the stuff that they do.
Yeah.
Particularly Chris Jericho stuff.
Yes.
Chris Jericho was always great in WWE, but now it's like he's unmuzzled and he can say stuff like shit on AEW.
And some stuff is just absurd. I remember this video package like very early on when he won the first ever AEW title. And they put this package together and he's bragging about being the youngest ever AEW champion,
yeah.
Even though he's like 45
he's almost 50.
Right. And you're like, fuck, that's funny, right? Like, why not lean into it a little bit that this is silly? But at the same time, I'm with you. Like, I look at it and I enjoy it a little more. And again, pre-pandemic, right? But it seemed like it wasn't insulting me quite as much as...
It absolutely, and that's one of the things that I've loved most about it. I continue to I've watched AEW every single week. I haven't missed an episode. And when you watch it, JR, who's good old Jim Ross,
yeah,
who people may know from WWE, he's their lead play-by-play commentator. And say what you will about his age, and perhaps he's not as quick as he once was, but
right,
he doesn't insult your intelligence by pretending there is no global pandemic right now.
Right.
You see people in the crowd with masks. You see some people wearing masks, and he says, like, oh, we hope that you're staying safe out there. Like, you know, we are. Everybody's wearing a mask, and we're trying to get through this pandemic together. So, like, let us try and entertain you for a few hours. Like,
right,
let's go. And you're like, well, fucking A, that's exactly what I'm here for.
Let's do that, yeah.
Yeah. It's the fact that it doesn't insult your intelligence. There are new stars, which they're introducing, and it's not the fact that it's an old WWE person who came in. It's a reinvented star. The person who came over from WWE never hit their zenith,
right?
AKA Dean Ambrose.
Yeah,
got and
shit
now
writing
he's one of the AEW's biggest stars.
Yeah,
and they're introducing you to new big stars. Hangman Adam Page
yes,
is one of the biggest stars that they have. He's the tag team champion alongside the best Canadian wrestler there is in the world right now, Kenny Omega, who
right,
also happens to be from Winnipeg, the same place where Chris Jericho's from.
Mm-hmm.
There's just so much new, and it's different in its presentation in terms of the content. Yes, it's still a wrestling show. Yes, there's still going to be promos. There's still going to be matches. There's still going to be Gaga.
Yeah.
But you know what? It's fun. And it's not so over the top produced that it gets hard to buy into.
And there's also they have you'll correct the terminology, but like standings, right? Like wins
yep,
and
they,
losses.
They have rankings. Yeah.
Matter. You don't get to lose for 7 weeks in a row and get a title shot next week. Whereas that sounds dumb as I guess if you're not so into the wrestling scene or whatever, like why would that? But it does happen on WWE television where they just expect you to forget. But if you watch this and you invest in this like you would in any other TV show, you're like, this guy's won a pile of matches in a row. You know, he's moving up the rankings. Maybe he's got a shot at Cody in the TV title or whatever might be going on there, right? And it makes sense. There's some continuity as a sports fan that you can dig into and go, yeah, I buy that, right? Like, this has been set up for a while. It's not just, we need somebody to fight this week. Here you go. It's
yeah, you said the cross-promotion of sports fandom, and what a market that I think is available to be grabbed, that is.
Yeah.
Is the sports fan. I've always said I would love, you know, I'm a massive sports fan. I'm a massive wrestling fan. I said I would always love like a trade deadline. And then you get a trade deadline show in WWE. You can't do that in All Elite Wrestling. They only have one show.
You know, like the draft lottery where it's a race 3 weeks later.
Yeah, it's like it doesn't make any sense. Just like why aren't there like insiders? Why don't you have like reports leading up to it? Like
GTV.
I consume that shit regularly.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't I do it with my wrestling?
Exactly.
And you can make it a little goofy if you need to because it's wrestling.
Yes.
It doesn't.
We're willing
have to
go
be
a certain distance with you.
I'm already
you just can't
buying.
Insult me.
Yeah, I'm already buying into it.
Right.
It's like I'm in on the joke.
Yep.
And I'm fine with that.
Yep.
So let's go a little further. Let's have some fun with it, and let's not make it so over the top produced with scripted word by word promos, which are end up just being so poorly delivered because you can't. You're trying to please an audience of one, which is Vince McMahon. So if you please him, that's good. But then you're not pleasing anybody else who actually liked it.
Well, do you think that this is? You know, when you go back all the way to the Attitude Era, The Rock has a rough idea. You're supposed to get over this because you're going to face this guy. We'd like you to mention this, but go do it. Same with Mick Foley, same with Stone Cold, same with any of the other big stars. And at some point, a few times, Vince has been burned by people leaving him or just not showing up to work. And I've read a few different theories, and I don't find it hard to believe that at some point, and this is where I'd like you to correct me if you think this is wrong, he's decided it's more important for the brand to be the thing and not the guy. I don't want people showing up to see Stone Cold because Stone Cold might not be here. I want people showing up to see WWE, and it doesn't matter who's... So you sort of cap the level that you let certain people get to because you don't want them getting too big? Or is it more just poor writing? They haven't developed stars. Like, which side of that do you come down on?
So I've certainly heard that before.
Yeah.
I've read lots surrounding that. And the premise makes a lot of sense. Stone Cold Steve Austin is so big that when you take him away, it hurts the bottom line too much.
And if he just says, I'm not coming to work, it puts me under pressure to sign him because that's what everybody's coming to see. Whereas I'd like to just be able to pluck people out of this and have people still show up.
So here's I understand the theory, but I don't subscribe to it necessarily.
Okay.
Mostly because as a business, it would be so fucking stupid to say I don't want to make the most amount of money I possibly can,
right?
Even if it's in a short period. Because that cash windfall will allow you to create other business opportunities down the road.
Right.
So I don't think that Vince McMahon would say, I don't want to create a star like Stone Cold Steve Austin again, because if he leaves, it'll hurt too much. I think that it was more the latter question that you asked. In it's become too difficult to make a new star because of the way sports entertainers, wrestlers are now produced.
Right.
Both in terms of how they're produced when they're first coming up and quite literally how they're produced when they're on a television show. Don't go out and say whatever you want, but make sure to plug the promo or plug the pay-per-view this Sunday.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, next Monday on Raw at 8 o'clock on USA Network.
Right.
You have to go out and you have to say this and make sure you hit this metaphor about the Big Show being a giant that falls from the beanstalk or some shit like that Roman Reigns had to say a while ago about the Big Show.
Right.
That was absolutely terrible that apparently Vince McMahon wrote himself.
Oof.
I think that is the issue where you're asking these pro wrestlers to become professional actors overnight.
Yeah, recite a script and as opposed to shooting from the heart. And
it's too difficult. I've never worked behind the scenes in wrestling, so I can't say this for sure. But for me, it just would make, when I work in television and somebody gives me a script, it's easier for me to look at the script and hit bullet points rather than read word for word exactly what is written, because it wasn't written by me. So I'm not going to deliver it in a way that was thought of in whomever wrote it.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, of course. Last thing for you then before we get out of here, because I meant to get to this way earlier in the show and you know, because I also just work off bullet points instead of following a script. Sometimes you miss some things. I mentioned your show there, the Top Turnbuckle Podcast, and I know it's been off for a little while now, but I really enjoyed what you guys had going on there. And there was and you guys had a few different voices between yourself and Matty Hayes and Andrew David Cox. I know he tried to make a go of it with a different show that I guess is on hiatus or whatever. I'm curious. It was under the Sportsnet banner. How does that come together? Are you guys at the time sort of buddies around the scene there at Sportsnet and decide that this is something you'd like to do? Is it something that they approach you with? Where does that show come from? And I know you kind of split it up at times in terms of you guys will do Raw and we'll do SmackDown or whatever. What does that look like in terms of how it comes together under an umbrella like Sportsnet?
Sure. So it originally started with a couple of guys from 680 and the Fan, 680 News and the Fan 590 in Toronto. Jeff Rahoman, I believe, was one of the original founders of the show.
Right.
He was one of the news reporters on 680 News.
Mm-hmm.
And after a while, it got passed down to a couple other guys. They eventually brought on one of the guys who used to be on Aftermath, which is Sportsnet's WWE-centric kind of rap show.
Sure.
His name was Chris Morrison,
yep.
Who we became friends. He brought on another one of my buddies who worked at the time in the newsroom. His name was John Gale.
Okay.
John Gale brought me on. We kind of shot the shit a little bit. When the show became bigger, and then they decided to split the brands. We brought in Andrew David Cox, and we brought in Matty Hayes. And
that's not his full name.
Sorry, Matty Big Sexy Hayes. Is that what you're looking for?
Yeah, of course it was. That's terrific, man. Okay. Big Sexy Matty Hayes.
Of course, Big Sexy Matty Hayes. We call him that because he's legitimately 6'9", so he's quite a big guy.
But not legitimately sexy? Is that the part that you're...
I just don't want to admit that to him.
Fair enough.
And then there was another guy, Mike Sesney. He was a producer at the Fan 590, so we split the show up into two. And we didn't really have any direction. The folks at the Fan just kind of let us do our own thing. It was posted to the website. It was posted to the Apple airwaves or Spotify or wherever, wherever the hell you got podcasts at the time. And we just had to go with it for a while. And it was honestly a ton of fun. You know, Chris became one of my really good friends. Johnny Gale was one of my really good friends as well. I love that guy. And then just after a while, Sportsnet started focusing. They wanted to focus. There were so many podcasts. Republishing radio shows as podcasts, and there was over 40 podcasts at one point just under the Sportsnet banner, and it's like that was way too many,
right?
Especially for quality control, if you wanted to make sure that everything was living up to the standard that Sportsnet sets, which is really high.
For sure.
For instance, like you think of a show like 31 Thoughts, which is so good.
Yes, it is.
It's in the way it's produced, all its content, and then you have a show like ours, who is essentially just produced by us, and I'm not a radio guy. I've dabbled in some audio a little bit, but we didn't have the professional production that we wanted, and so Sportsnet made the call. They said, we're going to just take away some podcasts just to narrow our focus,
right?
And they said, we just don't really have the resources right now to throw behind to make sure that your podcast is really, really good. And so they said, we're just going to put your podcast on hiatus, which, looking back, I completely understand. It totally makes a lot of sense.
Right.
And it just went on hiatus and never really came back because we started focusing on different things. Coxie went over and did his own thing. Yeah, his show's on hiatus right now. I work with him almost every day down in the Sportsnet newsroom. And yeah, he wants to get it going again, but it's just kind of been...
Well, and he's so good at the impressions too, right?
Oh, like, he makes me laugh. So good. The Weird Al of professional wrestling. Yeah, that's a shoot.
Yeah, to me, as someone who's done this show for 5.5 years now, I think it's less important. The more that I do this, the thing that I learn and have confirmed me more and more is that it's less about what you're talking about, and it's more about people getting comfortable with you, right? And enjoying the show, enjoying the personalities, enjoying the, you know, no different than people getting up and listening to their favorite morning show on the radio mm-hmm. every day or whatever. And that was one of the things that I was sort of losing interest in wrestling, but the show you guys were putting on was so good. I was so disappointed when it stopped happening. You guys were putting on a really awesome show and, you know, stole a couple things here and there. And
once again, I really appreciate that. I'll pass that on to the guys for sure, too.
Yeah.
But, you know, and it's funny, it's the same for me, where even if I wasn't super into the product that week or even for a few weeks, it was always nice to go into the studio and shoot the shit with my friends about it. It made it way more entertaining to talk about it, made it way more entertaining to get, made it easier to get into the product that may have been a little dull or lackluster at that time.
Where can we find, you're going to be, by the time this comes out on Thursday, it'll be in hindsight, but where will we be able to find your chat with David Arquette and anything coming up that you got for SummerSlam? How will we find that?
So SummerSlam weekend, so I'll be all over the Sportsnet websites. The David Arquette piece, I think, should come out on Thursday. Mm-hmm. I'm talking to him tomorrow, this being Tuesday, so Wednesday. Right. Yep. Following that. And then Friday, I'll probably have a preview for SummerSlam. Sunday, I'm doing a live blog for Sportsnet. So if you decide you want to check out the Thunderdome, then you can head over to the Sportsnet website and just see what I have to say about it. I don't usually pull any punches, despite the fact that we are a partner of WWE, Sportsnet is.
I can vouch for that, yeah.
And then Monday, I'll have a little bit of a recap piece. And then hopefully in the next couple of weeks, I have another piece coming, if you don't mind. Just
by all means, man.
I can tell you a little bit about it.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if you remember the skateboarder Mike Vallely.
Rings a bell, but no strong...
He gained notoriety for his appearances in the Tony Hawk video games. Some of them. I think it was Tony Hawk 3, 4, and Underground.
Okay.
And anyways...
Those are so good. They're starting to relaunch some of them, eh?
They're relaunching Tony Hawk 1 and 2, and this is what got me onto this story is... I saw that Mike Vallely's bio said that he was also a former professional hockey player.
Really?
Looked at his hockey DB. He's played 3 games of professional hockey in the Federal Prospects Hockey League, which is like it's like a super minor pro league.
Yeah, okay.
It's a tier or two below the ECHL.
All right.
And I emailed him and I said, what's the deal with this? And he got back to me and it was very intriguing what our conversation turned into. So he actually was mentoring a young hockey player named Corey Fulton, who was involved in
one of the Mighty Ducks movies? One of the Bash Brothers,
Fulton.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
He was involved in mentoring this young man who was... He's only a couple years older than I am, and this was in 2010. Fulton was engaged in an on-ice fight with Don Sanderson, if that doesn't ring a bell, he was involved in a fight where he lost his helmet, and then just as the two went to the ice, Sanderson hit his head on the back of the ice, and he went into a coma and he died a few weeks later. So Fulton was involved in that fight, and this very nearly scarred him. He was incredulous. He didn't want to go back to hockey. He couldn't go back to hockey. Eventually, after some convincing from his family and even the Sanderson family, he went to go try and play. And he went to a tryout with the Danbury Whalers of the Federal Prospects Hockey League, where Mike Vallely was there to do his sort of celebrity involvement on the team. Mike knew that it was more just like celebrity rather than him actually playing hockey. But Mike ended up taking Corey under his wing and helping him get back into hockey and helping him get over the fact that he was involved in this horrific, horrific incident.
Yeah.
So anyways, I got to talk to Mike about that, and he shared a lot of stories with me. I talked to Corey, and he shared some stories with me. So that story will be out hopefully in the next couple of weeks. And I think that's a pretty good story. So I feel like, you know, anybody who's a sports fan, skateboard fan, hockey fan, like you'll dig it for sure.
Well, as soon as you said that name, Don Sanderson, it brings you screaming back to...
Yeah.
Yeah, so... We will make sure that we share all of that at Tall Can Audio on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook.com/TallCanAudio. Certainly this week through SummerSlam week, and then when that piece comes out, I'm sure I'll see it, but if not, you'll let me know and we'll share it. But this has been terrific, man. I told you, you know, I enjoy following your stuff on Twitter And certainly during these wrestling weekends, sometimes I find it more interesting to follow the people covering it than the event itself sometimes. So always enjoyed the podcast. Enjoy your work to this day on sports. And I'm really glad you made a little time for us.
No, thanks, man. I really appreciate it, man. And like I told you before, next time you're in Toronto, you got to let me know, because I got tons of craft breweries here in the city that I got
very much down.
I got to tell you about. And
when I did reach out this last time to set up a time, you mentioned earlier that you had been at a party, and you admitted to, very much like me, I'm kind of enjoying the Pink Whitney, right?
So, So it's a couple guys that are on my beer league hockey team that it was somebody poured a tall glass of Pink Whitney for me, and I just said, "What is this?" Tried it, and you have about two of them. And first of all, you're like, "Wow, that's strong."
Yeah.
And second of all, you go, "This is actually pretty damn good."
I can
good.
Do this. Yeah.
Yeah. I can actually throw a couple of these back.
Really glad you made a little time for us. Thank you so much. That's Kevin Mickey of Sportsnet. This has been TCA number 718. Make sure you are subscribed wherever you're listening to this one. We're on Twitter and Instagram, like I said. I'm going to keep pumping these. Twitter and Instagram at TallCanAudio, Facebook.com/TallCanAudio. We'll catch these all on the next one.
Now, y'all ain't got nothing else for me to drink. I'm a haul ass. No, I'm serious. I'm about to haul ass. If y'all have no better shit than this to drink.
Thanks for listening. You can get more TCA at TallCanAudio.com or by searching TallCanAudio on your favorite podcast app.